Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mean Team.
QNL.
Episode 151, an archived episode with stuff that we cut from previous episodes. This is our summer gift to you.
Get excited!
Recorded for episode 145 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Man Team, QNL, and B. Kaiko.
What bonuses are you hoping to see in Civs to come? Looking at this list, every aspect is pretty well represented. We now know all of the Civs. I think we need to acknowledge that the day before this recording, Sweden was announced as the last Civ. They have an ability regarding, it seems like they're great people focused. One of their unique ability focuses around the Nobel Prize, and then one of their units has some kind of special interaction with great generals. So they seem to be a great people-focused civ. But the poster makes a valid point in that a lot of people seem to be concerned when it comes to the new civs that we get representation equally according to their placement geographically. Like, a lot of people have been complaining, and I think rightfully so, that these new civs seem to be really, really focused on Europe. There's a ton of new European civs. And we still haven't seen representation from, say, South America, except for the Incas, and Southern Africa, which a lot of people were hoping that the Zulu were going to make it into this new expansion. That the developers may be looking at, okay, what civs will focus on certain aspects of the game that are underdeveloped. This particular poster gives a list of what the focuses seem to be of the current civs, and I think some of the upcoming civs. So, for instance, he says food, the Aztecs, Inca, and Netherlands seem to have a good focus on that. Gold, Arabia, Netherlands, Persia, also the Inca, Iroquois, Songhai, and Spain. So going down the list, production, science, culture, happiness, faith, specialists, exploration, expansion, city-states focus, an army, a navy, and espionage. If you were to select a civ to develop one of these areas, what bonus do you think you would want a civ to focus on? It's kind of a hard question because they try and balance historical accuracy with gameplay. For instance, they need to find, for this new expansion, a civilization that does get an espionage bonus. One of the standing civs is probably going to need to be adjusted to include espionage somehow so that we have an espionage-focused civ or somebody who's getting an advanced bonus in espionage. Otherwise, it's kind of the unfortunate stepchild of all these other mechanics in the game.
It would seem almost to be perhaps a nice fit if that perhaps went to the Songhai, because as we talked about, the Songhai unique ability has had to change because it embarked units defending themselves is only for the Songhai, except Gods and Kings is now going to make that possible for any particular unit, because you can have a ship on top of an embarked unit in order to defend itself, an embarked unit, of course, being a land-based unit that's traveling across the water. There are changes to the game, not only from new civilizations being introduced, but also modifying existing civilizations based on what you're introducing to the game, which I think in a way would be kind of nice, because then you could say, oh, well, of course, the only civs that are going to benefit from these new systems are the new civilizations that are being introduced. But you could go back and kind of help with the greater balance, because, of course, whatever you add into the existing pool has a ripple effect.
Yeah, the problem is the historical accuracy thing again. Were the Songhai a civilization that was particularly good at espionage? Somehow I doubt it that they really needed use for spies even out in Timbuktu. But maybe something like Russia might benefit from an espionage bonus. And we do know, they have said concretely, some, but not all, of the unique abilities of standing civilizations are going to get an adjustment. It's nice that they are going to try and incorporate the new mechanics into the abilities of the standing civs so that they can be integrated well. And it seems like they were trying to focus on finding civs that should benefit historically from these new mechanics. I was not all that surprised when they, for instance, announced that Ethiopia was one of their choices for new civs, given how religion has played such a large role historically in Ethiopia, and Haile Selassie is obviously important to Rastafarianism.
The Ethiopian leader seems pretty controversial, to tell you the truth. I mean, people are arguing that, you know, he's not actually that significant, you know, the despot that ruled for years. But, I mean, that's, you know, really any of the objections that you might get with any leader. It's just that he was recent.
I think they said he's the most modern civ leader we've ever had.
Correct.
Yeah, if Ethiopia was chosen as a civ, I was expecting Haile Selassie to be their leader. So, I don't know.
I was expecting Dara Yaakob again, but... I mean, maybe people wouldn't appreciate having him back, but I would.
I'm definitely part of the fan base of the Zulu. I really wanted to see them back, and I guess I'm
it's
guessing.
It's just that a Sith came without Shaka not being able
Shaka.
To roll me.
Yeah. The Zulu are interesting historically, so I know that they may just end up being another military Sith, but gosh darn it, I want my Shaka.
On the realism argument, the Songhai, not really known for, you know, espionage capability, I get the trying to balance the realism into this and try to have some kind of equitable distribution. But honestly, I mean, at this point, it's an expansion to an existing game. It's not Civilization VI, or we're not going back to the start of Civilization V and having, you know, espionage and religion in that game. And I think that if they spent the time to try to say, okay, now that we're introducing religion and espionage, go back, and then you probably end up redoing a fair bit or a substantial amount of the civilizations, and then that just ends up with greater balance issues. So I in that particular situation, that the gameplay needs to trump that realism aspect.
Don't want another science-based civ. I think civs with science is so powerful as it is that any civ that gets a major science bonus is just going to run away with most games. I think the gameplay is pretty well balanced out. I think the developers have been trying to think, as they've been finding interesting civs, also figuring out how they're going to affect the gameplay, and finding maybe some loose historical reasons for nudging a civilization toward a gameplay mechanic that will be beneficial.
When you have these new uniques, or any unique, really, you want a focus on how it changes the strategy away from normal gameplay. What kind of new concepts you need to use, how you want to perhaps play the game differently, tech differently, use different tactics, that kind of thing. I think that's what really gives each civ that has a unique ability or a unique unit or whatever, its flavor, the amount that it can potentially change your gameplay. So that's what I look for, rather than balancing out these specific aspects, you know, by category or whatever. I'm looking at, okay, how are they making, say, Japan play very differently from Polynesia? And Polynesia is a good example. They have, with their ability to contact everybody, even on water maps very quickly, you know, that's a big benefit to them, and they really want to milk that, whereas other civilizations really can't do that at all. That's just an example.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that's what this poster is trying to get at, is that it's nice that the civs have different flavors. You're not going to play Japan the same way you play Polynesia, and rightfully so. Different civs have different strengths, and it's nice to see the civs kind of run the gamut where the different mechanics of the game are concerned.
Recorded for episode 136 with Dan Q, the Mian Team, Oz Benno, Quantum Tarantino, and Philosophus.
I actually think that unhealthiness can have its biggest problems in the early game, because if you settle a city early on near jungle or floodplains, its growth can be completely stifled, and you don't have many options for overcoming that. It can be a real disadvantage to settling jungles.
I agree. I find that it's harder to deal with unhealthiness in the early issues because you don't have the production set up to build an aqueduct, or resources are a lot scarcer because your empire is smaller and you might not have open borders or, you know, trade routes available. I find it a lot harder, and it affects the current situation of the city, because when in the early game, you're more looking to grow as quickly as possible.
And you also have fewer options for rushing things in the early game. You've only got chopping and slavery, whereas in the late game, if you're running the right civics, you can just purchase it, and it's easier to deal with.
Not to mention that slavery's effectiveness is vastly reduced if you cannot go to the city.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Like the only way you're getting around unhealth from jungle is to clear the jungle. So
yeah.
It's usually not that bad because that's some nice grassland territory under there. As long as you have at least 3-ish good city sites beyond your capital, that will let you build up your initial economy and set up your ironworking or you know, get to alphabet and trade for ironworking, whatever. If you have to settle right into the jungle, that's pretty harsh. And floodplains are harder. You really just need to expand and get the resources in the early game. And that's not always easy or possible, so you have to be careful with the floodplain. So do you have some options? You can set place your city so that they don't give you a lot of unhealth or, They themselves are food neutral, even under the effects of negative health. So as long as you have at least one good food resource, you can at least get some cottages going there or something like that do well with that.
Floodplains as well have the ability that they have 3 food rather than jungles 1 food. Even if there's some unhealthiness there, there's still some growth, like even if it's stifled. But the problem with it is that you can't chop away the floodplains and get rid of that unhealthiness. It's there for the whole game.
So if you have the health, they are amazing tiles.
Yep. Basically, in the late game, there are more sources of unhealthiness because you have factories and so on, all sorts of buildings that are producing it. But those are things that you have control over, and you can avoid building them if you need to. Whereas in the early game, if there is bad terrain, there's just bad terrain. And it takes time to overcome that. It can be overcome, as you pointed out, either floodplains or jungles. But it just takes time, and it slows you down. And that can have long-term repercussions.
Recorded for episode 138 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian Team, QNL, and Izmir Stinger.
I think this is kind of a spinoff of an earlier thread, which was asking if any girls play Civ. Obviously, it's false. No girls play Civ. Girls are not on the internet.
Nope.
But, you know, some person decided to perpetuate this myth of girls on the internet by creating a calendar of images of women supposedly using the internet and even possibly playing Civ. So, yeah, that's pretty crazy. 12 months of 2 Metro Ninjas illusion of members of the female gender on computers.
Yeah, I call shenanigans because I see only one picture where you can actually see them playing Civ.
Although June's facial features do match that of a person who has just recently launched a tactical nuke or 7. So maybe June as well.
Well, there's another reason we also wanted to talk about this calendar in addition to its content.
Who's not in it?
I miss October, actually. You can see all parts of my body, including, like, well, actually nothing.
No. Lisa lies. I'm actually Miss October.
They
can only find 11 girls to play Civ.
That's true. Hello, Phyllis. How are you today?
That's right. Actually, the real Mian Team is a female player, but I'm just a front because girls can't actually be on the internet. So I do the voicing and I read from a script what she told me to say. It's the popular theory these days.
The calendar also references the polycast.net as a great Civ site. Finally, someone acknowledges this. In writing! Woohoo!
Recorded for episode 127 with Dan Q, the Mian Team, Credit Mandua, In the Zone, and Martin Alvito.
Actually, wait just a second. I can sum up in one sentence. Don't take that oil.
Now see how we come to exactly the opposite.
What if you really need that oil? You wait for the third ring to expand on that city, or the fourth ring, so it'll get the oil anyway.
Acid Rain says, should I build a city to take this oil? This map has very little oil. I don't really need it right now, but what do you guys think? There is oil right outside his capital. Now, because it is more than 3 tiles away from the capital, he can't buy it, but he could either settle for the oil if he has a great artist or can get a great artist. He could culture bomb it, or he could just even wait. I mean, Talk about great artists, you know, to culture bomb to get the oil. I'd be curious to know what your cultural output return is right now, and at that particular point in the game, how many turns you are away from an expansion. I mean, you don't have a great artist, you can just build some more cultural buildings to try to push that. Or you, someone else even said, there's a city-state that he noted that has oil in its territory, but it's not been hooked up yet. Do you have to work vote to the city-state after you buy the city-state? I think actually the best options at this point are to either get that from the city-state, even if that's just temporarily, so you have that oil until you then have the source natively because you push your culture out. I mean, the city wouldn't be terrible, but as someone else noted, you look like you're doing quite well already, so I don't think he needs to really build a city in order to get that. I think
the city doesn't need it right away. The only way I'd settle a resource like that is if you really needed oil and you needed it, like, quickly. Do you ever really need oil that badly, though? I don't know. But that's the only time I could even picture attempting to justify it, because otherwise you're just going to tank your happiness for what? You're going to deny Pop in your other cities. So I don't know.
How's
he going to tank his happiness here? He's got 15 surplus.
Oh, is that 15? Oh, okay. Never mind.
One thing
it looks like 5 to me. I didn't see the one.
He already has aluminum, so he could just go straight for modern armor with a little bit of teching to skip
the
tanks.
But he's got all those cavalry that he wants to upgrade the tanks and then the modern armor, right?
Ah, I didn't catch that part.
Yeah, there is
that. I'm thinking the great artist is probably the best approach.
It depends
if you have one.
If you have one, or you can, you know, reasonably, well, you know, if you have a specialist, you know, that's already, you know, like through a wonder or something, that you're already getting that. I'd be more tempted to, yeah, try to get it culturally, not necessarily with great artists. I mean, if you can get it, great, awesome. But otherwise, just maybe push a little more culture in the capital if you need it. I mean, heck, maybe he's going to get a border pop next turn. I mean, he doesn't say, nobody even asked. Admittedly, you're not necessarily going to know where that border pop's going to be. But otherwise, just get it from a city-state in the interim if you feel you really need it right this instant. Or build a city.
Well, look at it this way. Yeah, like, say he just wants to end the game. He looks like he's in a dominant position already. He might have owned most of the capitals in possession, and he just needs some tanks to snuff the last AI. Well, okay, just drop a settler on that oil, build your tanks, and or upgrade your tanks, and just go kill him right now, you know, end the game. So it does depend on what you're trying to do and how quickly you're trying to do it.
Yes, very true. Or, you know, you could just rage quit, I guess. But I wouldn't recommend
it. I'm winning by too much. Rage! Forget this game. I don't like winning.
Alright, and then... imagine notes, if you buy all the tiles close to that tile, you can border pop a fourth tile before the rest of the three ring tiles. Yeah, you could do that too. I guess there are some other... I can't remember if there were actually some other tiles that he could buy.
There are. He has not maxed out that third ring.
Okay. All right, so yeah, you could combine that with when you are going to get your next border pop, so if you want to better ensure that you're going to get that, then you could max out. Okay, there's no way that I could buy any more, so therefore when the border pops, I know it's going to be beyond those three rings. Yeah, there you go. Combine a couple of points.
Recorded for episode 138 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian Team, QNL, and Izmir Stinger.
Not a perfect segue, but a reasonable enough segue. Oh, that's not on the user interface. What a shame. Speaking of not on the user interface, Diplo hit.
So, I think we've talked about this topic indirectly before, but Courthouse notes that he just installed patched his BTS to 3.19, so you could install the bat/bug mod. For future reference, those are two mods that just adjust the user interface and don't actually do anything to gameplay. So he says, early into my first game at about 1000 BC, 4 of the 6 civs have given me a -1 or -2 Diplo for, quote, a first impression is a lasting one, unquote. This is new to me. So he's asking, you know, what this first impression penalty is about, you know, why do I have a -1 or 2 right off the bat? And he says also, you know, I'm getting a -1 for we feel threatened by our large civilization. So these are all, new, you know, Diplo penalties, that he's just observed. But actually the thing is, since these mods, don't actually adjust gameplay, They only address the UI. What they're actually showing is diplo penalties that have existed before that already have come baked into BPS. So this whole, you know, first impression is the lasting one refers to the intrinsic diplo penalty that one SIF has with another, usually based on it's based on the personality parameters written in the XML for the civilizations, or sorry, not civilizations, leaders. So usually the more hawkish civs will dislike the more peaceful civs. So you'll often see something like, you know, Shaka really hates the crap out of Gandhi or something like that. So it's just telling you what the base hidden modifier is for Diplo. And it's just, you know, since he's gotten those mods installed, it's just that those modifiers are more obvious now and he knows what's there. Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that you really have to, you know, pay attention to, especially if you're going for a Diplo victory, for example. You know, if you're really trying to make it to that plus 14 to get an AI to friendly, then it really matters, those one or two points that you might start off with.
The post to look at here is post number 7 by Undecided. He breaks it down pretty well. But for those of you who don't have access to the forum, essentially, first impression is a lasting one is tied to two things.
The two values in the XML file that determine the initial Diplo relations between AI civs. Peace weight, which is roughly correlated to their level of aggression, and warmonger respect, which allows some peaceful civs to coexist peacefully with warmongers until they get backstabbed. However, with regards to the human player, there is a fixed value determining the human AI relations between a particular leader and the human player, regardless of peace weights. And those show up as a first impression as a lasting one, either a bonus or a penalty.
So what happens with the warmonger respect modifier is that it's just with diplomacy, and generally warmonger AIs will give each other a bonus. And peaceful AIs don't get the bonus usually. But the warmonger's respect bonus doesn't apply to humans. Like they don't. I don't think that modifier actually is putting that.
Neither do they do that to each other.
One thing that's important to note, though, with the IEA base peace weight is that a high base peace weight does not mean that they're not likely to declare, and a low base peace weight does not mean that they are necessarily aggressive. For example, Pakal has a very low peace weight, pretty close to Shaka. And in a given game within the random number generator, he can actually have a lower peace weight than Shaka has, or even Monty if it's a really odd roll. But Pakal still has a 20-unit prob. He still can declare please, but it's pretty darn unlikely. Whereas Shaka is still quite likely to declare. And then you have guys at the higher end of the peace weight, like Sitting Bull and Gandhi and them. Well, Gandhi isn't really aggressive, but like Kamarabi has an amazingly high peace weight. But if he's pissed with you, he'll declare, and he'll declare very easily. And he's a fairly high unit prob to go with it. So there's some exceptions, and it really doesn't have anything to do with the no war probabilities. It's strictly for this intrinsic first impression is a lasting one bonus. And then this developing nations to feel threatened thing is just based on score, really.
Yeah, there's a couple of more XML-based penalties and bonuses you can get that the OP didn't mention, but they'll be revealed by Bug as well. We feel your small civilization is no threat to us. Some leaders are hard-coded to give you a bonus when you are behind them in score. Another one is developing nations should work together. If you are both in the bottom third of the score bracket, some leaders will give you a bonus. There's, let's see, what else is there? Something about loving your great empire. That is a bonus that people in the bottom third of the scoreboard give to people in the top third. And there's a whole handful of them. Basically, this is the reason why some leaders would go friendly at plus 8 and some needed like plus 14 before they were friendly. It's because they all need plus 10. You just weren't seeing these miscellaneous bonuses before.
Is it plus 10? I thought it was 11.
I don't know. Actually, now that you say 11, I think that might be right. I'm not sure.
I know that for Diplo Victory, they will vote for you as long as the actual net Diplo, including all these hidden modifiers, is +8. So you don't need friendly to get a Diplo win vote, actually. You can get it with +8. Playing carefully.
Recorded for episode 132 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian Team, Q&L, and Cartamandua.
You know, it's kind of interesting when we talk about how, you know, the AI can get, you know, a lot of gold through bonuses. And then just kind of, you sometimes see like, you know, AIs accumulating a lot of gold, but not necessarily doing a lot of, you know, a lot with it. Now, this new thread by Renero, over on Synthenatics, suggests that we actually remove the AI bonuses that are, you know, production, culture, and growth, and add a combat modifier that actually increases the AI strength and, well, combat strength and experience for the AI. I'm not actually sure how I feel about that, just because, I mean, his point is that, you know, the AI is not that effective in combat, but... at the same time, like, I'm not sure. I mean, of course, you know, I think we're probably all in consensus that, you know, simple bonuses are not necessarily the best way to do it, although it is probably the easiest way and the most quickly implementable way. But at the same time, I don't know if one needs to remove all the culture, you know, all the other AI bonuses in favor of this one. His point is that, you know, the AI will use its production bonus for better non-military development. So it'll develop faster than the best human player without bonuses. Since the enemy units are not that great at, you know, doing tactical stuff, that is, you know, if humans are good enough at war in Civ 5, they can actually easily take down a greater number of units than what they have or what they would have been able to in Civ 4, which was more straightforward. So I don't know how I feel about this. I mean, You could generally boil it down to the point that, you know, if you give the AI more bonuses, it will be more fair because, you know, they'll just kind of cheese win by having a lot of bonuses rather than, you know, making a better AI. But at the same time, I don't really think that Frost has the time or, will to create, you know, to program a better AI for war. I'm not sure if this is a better alternative. At this point, I'm thinking like.
Hard to say. You know,
I mean, at this point, I'm thinking, like, no, not really. I mean, I just hate the combat and experience modifiers. I don't know. I can see where I could get a little bit screwy.
Essentially, you're stripping one bonus and giving another. Now, why would that be better? I mean, I guess I can see it because you're talking about giving bonuses where the AI is weakest. I'm not sure how that would affect gameplay, though. I've never considered it. It's really odd. It might actually improve gameplay, as far as I'm aware. But maybe not, because you'd still, like, you would trade a tech lead slash deficit for stronger units. So the AI would tech as well, but its units would still be comparable in strength, but it still would be teching poorly. I don't know, it's strange. I'm not sure what it ultimately would accomplish. If the AI is teching at king levels and you're teching at deity levels, you're not going to have any problems beating it, because even though its guy has more strength, you're still going to destroy it. Because you're going to have rifles and he's going to have pikes. So I don't know. I mean, if bonuses are bonuses at the end, I guess. Giving them stronger combat units wouldn't make them any better tactically. It would just make them more effective at a given tech level. This is really never given the AI direct combat bonuses in any of the Civ games that I've heard of. Maybe they want to make it look less obvious that the AI is cheating, even though it's flagrantly obvious that the AI cheats. I don't think it would matter.
Yeah, this is not something that's, you know, that's been in any Civ iterations before. I mean, this is, by the way, Dan, did you put this up because there's a poll in it?
Of course he did.
I will neither confirm nor deny this suggestion.
Okay, well, so that's a yes. So,
please, the fifth.
the poll asks, you know, what do you actually think about this? And the options are, you know, let's change it. Let's add the combat bonuses, but don't change the other bonuses, or leave it as is, The majority has gone for the fourth option, which is, I can't say for sure, it's better to check the suggestion as a mod first, which I agree with. If you really want to try this so bad, then, you know, leave the rest of us alone and, you know, go off and do it as a mod. And then let us know what you think.
You know, to me, a lot of this discussion gets back to something we discussed earlier this season. I think it was a side discussion to another topic about smart AI versus dumb AI and whether the AI is playing to win or playing to lose.
Or playing to make you lose.
Or that. I agree that it would be interesting to see how this would play out in a mod. But personally, I would rather see efforts towards making the AI a little more intelligent rather than giving them, you know, straight-up bonuses. I mean, if you compare Civilization 1 to Civilization 4 or 5 in terms of the complexity of the game, things that the AI is able to do, not necessarily saying they're doing it well, but that they're able to actually engage in, there has been a progression, and we're talking 20 years here since the original Civ came out.
Holy crap.
Are you feeling old? when we continue down that path, I think if we just continue with that notion to improve the AI, who knows where we may be in 20 years, rather than trying to go with something like this, which is giving, you know, the AI more bonuses.
Yeah, I think we all agree on that front. I mean, but, you know, at the same time, like, you know, there's so many other things that need to be improved about, you know, Civ 5 that I honestly think that if they were to improve the, you know, the combat of the AI in any way, it would be through some sort of, you know, straight up bonus like this. It's in our, like, dream world of, like, you know, good AI.
Yeah, I guess I think more of this topic in terms of the, you know, the Civilization franchise in general as opposed to a particular Civ title.
Recorded for episode 140 of Dan Q, the Me and Team, Awesome Me, and Hawk.
Minor ideas and suggestions. I'd like to discuss first one of my ideas, but I have to say that I've noticed quite a few pretty cool ideas in this thread. My idea is called Common Knowledge. I'll just explain it. First of all, say you're in a region populated by other civilizations, and everyone else has researched a certain technology, but you haven't, then after a certain amount of turns, you'll get that technology either for free, or you could decide to research it yourself, and you'll research it a bit faster. But this is contingent on there has to be a certain number of civs in your region, and your region will be, of course, a certain size as well. Like, it can't happen outside a certain number of tiles.
My only concern with that is that it throws the balance in favor of people who cut technology in favor of military, perhaps unnecessarily. And it might slow down the global tech pace as more people come to rely on it. It depends. From a balance standpoint, though, it makes me nervous because, okay, you can skip ironworking and just start building units, right? And then everyone else is going to tech ironworking, and oh, look, now you have ironworking too and can just upgrade all your units. Now you actually have your swordsmen faster than your opponents who researched ironworking before you. It's just a small example, but you would never really fall that behind then unless people took differing deep tech beelines.
Be worked so it's balanced properly. Although I do feel that this would make it a little bit more historically correct, because in real history, people who have fallen behind technology, they just seem to absorb the technology of those more powerful around them.
But Jin pointed out in the chat here that this is included to some extent in the game. I wasn't sure if it applied to Civ 5. I know it does to Civ 4 as well. But you do get a tech reduction cost. The others just have the tech that you know. So it doesn't cost as much for you to research the technology. And that's in Civ 5 already.
Wow.
But it's only with known Civ, so there's some incentive to explore and meet people, I guess. The more Civs that know it that you have met, the greater the bonus is. But it's there for each Civ that knows it, basically. You get a discount.
So that means that, like, Russian crosswomen in Civ 5 makes it even more powerful because you can pick up the rest of the technologies faster than the other team would be able to by rushing something like that, having a powerful military unit. Then just holding your lines with the crosswoman unit or a powerful unit like that, and then teching behind it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, unless they do it too, or you know, then they would have a discount on research and crossbows to some extent too. So there's an order of operations thing there. But
that's true.
Yeah, and that would apply, yes.
Hmm. Yeah, but unless you have espionage or heavy trade with a civilization that's actually quite a distance from you, I don't think that they should be able to increase the technologies that they have. I don't think it should, this common knowledge thing should work with that. I think it should be civilizations that are juxtaposed to where you are, you know, within a certain amount of bases, just really close, varied depending on how many players there are on the map, including AI. But unless you're playing a dual map, it wouldn't be just one other civ next to you has a technology. You'd have to be a set amount as well.
Hmm.
I liked the suggestions that fit well with the actual history, and I feel improved the gameplay as well.
I am 100% with you, Corbin, about how you make this civ. Whenever I go through game suggestions, whenever I kind of moderated this post that I had on Civfanatics, I always thought, how is it historically affected? But at a certain point in gameplay, I find that you can't make it 100% historically accurate because it is a game.
That's true.
For example, I have an idea with Plyline that you have from your units to your cities or your city borders. And there's like a basic line that's drawn through the tiles that is like highlighted. When you click on the unit, it shows you where the supply line is. And the enemy can cut off the supply line and it'll cost you strength and stuff like that. Then you can build things like supply trains that you can actually carry with your units. And basically earlier units, like warriors, wouldn't need a supply line as much because they can kind of live off the land. But as you go to more modern and things, you need that supply line more and more. Like you can maybe bomb the supply line and things like that. So it makes even air fighting even more valuable than it already is in Civ. But that's just another game mechanic that you can't really balance. But I do disagree that the extended tech tree, because, for example, maybe they fix that in the new expansion pack when they come out with World War II fighters and biplanes and things like that, if they do. It says here that your research tech gives fighters now, and in a few turns you can research the one that gives jet fighters. I kind of agree that there should be some earlier maybe unit rather than space in between the extended tech tree. And he obviously says more civilizations, but I mean, who doesn't want their own civilization, civilization is in.
I also liked a couple of points from Trashman. He mentioned faster production and slower research. This would probably change the game. I don't know, it might change the game a bit too much, but then again, it would really draw out the errors, and especially the classical era. Like, I actually think that it'd be worthwhile expanding on the classical era. Maybe leave the other eras go, but the classical era is just way too short.
Have you ever played on different game speeds?
Yeah.
If you want to have a longer, more expansive game, I think that maybe game speed should be more effective than kind of changing the different eras, because I think it's pretty balanced already about the eras. I mean, even though maybe you stay in classical a little longer, but I mean, as in the history, you know, you stay in the ancient era longest probably, and then as time goes by, it speeds up, increases the frequency of you going to a different era, I feel like. And in regards to production, I mean, I found that if you increase production too much, it might kind of unbalance the game. And I don't know about you guys, but I feel as though production might be the most important ability, because I feel as though of all the demographics, what gives you the most versatility, what makes you say to yourself, well, if I have to go to war, let's go to war, let's do this. Or let's say, okay, well, you're not going to war right now? Fine, I'm going to build up my civ. Fine, let's do that too. Whatever I have to do to make my civ better, I can use production to get there by buildings, units.
Yeah. Another idea that Trashman suggested was defensive buildings giving you bonus happiness, because it's another realistic thing. People tend to feel happier when they feel safer.
I agree a little bit, but I don't really think about it now, to be honest with you. I mean, I feel safe. I live in Maryland, and we have a fort right down the road from me. I don't really think about it. But, I mean, basically, back in the day when you used to have city walls, it's a definite option. But, you know, in honor, you can already get that ability. Maybe you can soup it up by that. It makes the honor more powerful. Maybe it makes walls more powerful. But, I mean, maybe happiness is a good idea to add on defensive abilities early on, early civs, earlier.
Yeah, I was sort of thinking around walls as well.
Yeah. I mean, maybe walls, maybe castles. And then after that, you think about it, and you feel comfortable. I guess you're still happy, because in the end, it's not on your mind, but it's there.
Back in the day, in medieval times and whatnot, you actually saw the walls every day if you lived around the actual city. So it would have made a difference, and you would have noticed the difference as well. Like, people without walls around the cities would have definitely felt less safe, because, you know, they could just be invaded by a marauding band.
Barbarian.
Yeah. I like the quote for when, what was the technology where you get walls? Masonry. That's it.
Crews, not their friends, that cities learn the lesson of building high walls.
In Civilization V, I believe it says, how happy are those whose walls already writhe. So it's definitely suitable.
I would agree that, you know, maybe there should be a happiness factor. You have to go in logistically. You have to say, does one wall equal a circus? What makes you happier, a circus or walls? You know, and I don't know. You have to ask somebody. I'd love to be able to go back in time and ask somebody, you know, this question and say, what makes you happier, circuses or walls? But, I mean, we can't really do that.
Vary person to person. But I'd say that a lot of people living back in medieval times and ancient times, I reckon that actually prefer walls over a circus. I mean, sure, they'd love a circus, but considering that an army could just march in, I think a lot of people would actually prefer, for their family's sake, walls around the city.
I agree, so I don't know what to say. Maybe they should change it.
Well, I mean, in Civilization V right now, down the social policy tree, if you get to professional army, you get +1 happiness for every defensive building.
Exactly.
Walls, castle, arsenal, and military base. And actually, before that, in the same honor tree, if you just have a garrison.
Garrison, yeah.
In each city, you get +1 happiness. So are we talking about being able to get that happiness or some measure of happiness, even if you choose not to go down the honor social policy?
Basically, I think
you should have something anyway. The social policy would, of course, extend on that noticeably, but even without that, you know, naturally, just building walls alone, even just a little bit of happiness would be nice.
And that might make honor more powerful, which everybody's trying to do. I mean, everybody I talked to be honest with you, that I polled, said honor is not really a viable option. Tradition sometimes is a viable option. But liberty generally is the only option to go, to be honest with you, in a multiplayer game. I mean, to be able to keep up with the production, the early production, because, for example, like I said, production is one of the most important things, is because you have that versatility of building different units or buildings to be able to say, okay, well, I'm going to build 3 libraries in my 3 new cities. And while you only have to build 1, I still get more production. Hope, I think, in the end, if you did like probably a formula for it, you probably get more production and happiness and science in the end from the smaller cities than you do from the bigger cities as of now. Now, I actually wrote into you guys for the Christmas special to talk to you about the science versus population figure, and I talked about how it doesn't make any sense. Maybe a change, and this is a great kind of idea too, or I think, is that the current population figure is that every time you grow, you have exponentially more and more amount of food that you need for a new population, but you don't really get the benefit of it. You don't really get 2 extra science or anything like that. You don't really get that. No real limitation in the game, meaning like you don't need to have +8 to get a university. You can build a university of +5 city and work it. Before you guys comment on this, I'd like Corbin's opinion too, but kind of see how do you feel about, you know, the population and tech figure as of now and how I think it doesn't work. I'll be honest with you. I think it's broken.
Yeah, I think there might be something in this as well. I'm not sure I can put my finger on it exactly, but I see where you're coming from. I think I've noticed something amiss there as well.
Yeah, you have like a population of like double the other person, yet you're still tied in science. It makes no sense unless they built like a whole bunch of libraries, but generally they don't. I mean, generally you can still produce as much science. It goes by citizen, not population, which makes no sense to have the exponential amount of increase of food per pop in the game to me.
Yeah, but that might be because, you know, some people might want to build a massive empire with like heaps of cities, while another one wants to build just one or just a few, you know, just a few cities. So maybe they're just trying to keep it balanced there.
But the thing is that's what I'm saying, is that through trial and error, many, many, many trials and errors, tradition and honor just does not work. If you play Civ 5 competitively, generally players that play all the time and get all the kinks out of the game, I mean, we're talking liberty is by far the strongest social policy, and that's why I made recommendations about how you can change like the tradition tree and the honor tree to make it a little bit better. And I like the walls idea. I like, because that might make honor even more attractive, because you would have that extra happiness on top of the happiness for the walls. So, I mean, that might be a kind of roundabout way to improving the honor tree.
Yeah.
Rather than just building walls for wall's sakes to get happy, perhaps within the honor tree itself, if you make that the happiness from the walls a little available earlier in honor, then maybe that would make honor to be a more attractive option, particularly in competitive play. Although to me, when I think about the happiness from the walls, it's not so much about like the formalized happiness in the system, but rather the indirect, the inherent happiness of we've got greater defense. Although to me, with the walls, unless I'm actually going towards that with regards to the social policy, I'm more likely just to place units strategically or, you know, otherwise position myself so that I'm getting the benefit of the defense from units on the front line as opposed to the city itself. But it's another way to go.
Yeah. To mention one more of the ideas that I liked on the list It was by, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Goldlecht. The idea was that more of the technologies give you more tile bonuses, such as biology could give you an extra food for farms, and dynamite could give you an extra bonus for in mines.
Certain technologies you get an increase in terms of yield output from farms and from quarries, etc. As far as the biology and the farms, well, I'm thinking of Civilization 4 now. I mean, I like talking about Civilization 4 in a positive light. I'm not necessarily sure we need more, and part of that in Civilization 5 is because I think of the buildings that we can construct between. Of course, if you're on a river, there's the water mill, but even if you're not, there's the granary, and then later on, there's the aqueduct for the greater carryover, and then, of course, with hospitals to give you, what is it, 5 food or something like that, just plus 5 food inherently. As far as the food part in particular with biology in Civ 5 as we have right now, I'm not going to be in favor of that.
But what about the dynamite with the giving a bonus to mines?
I'm trying to remember the technology that gives us the...
Chemistry.
Is it chemistry that gives us the...
bonus for the mines already. So, I mean, basically, okay. I mean, that's through, I guess, like if you have to do certain gold processes or things like that, I think that you use chemistry more than you use dynamite. Dynamite would be like maybe improves your worker speed. That would make more sense than...
That's sort of what I was thinking with dynamite.
Oh, I was just talking about a shift in when that's available as opposed to something additional.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't add anything. I don't think I'd add, but you can maybe shift. Leave it out to the people. Make a poll.
Yeah, yeah.
I love polls.
Polls are fun.
Recorded for episode 144 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Man Team, and Lizburst.
As expected, there's a lot of suggestions. The mods at Civ Fanatics threw together a whole bunch of these into one thread, which is 16 pages long or something. It's pretty extensive. I haven't gone through all of them, but I saw some really good suggestions which could possibly be beneficial. And one was to raise tile yields to give more variety to terrain, but that's been discussed before and causes other issues. But the effect that it wants is to make the locations of your cities more important when choosing where to put them down. And I do believe that's a bit of a no-brainer in the negative sense. You just don't really have to think a lot about where you place your cities currently. And so more variety to the terrain and more tile variation yields would possibly improve on that.
I'm assuming that suggestion doesn't mean... But proportionately, like out of proportion in the sense that, okay, let's raise everything by 25%.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if you do it with the raw yield, that's going to just make things go.
Yeah.
You make that mine have one more hammer.
Than that before?
Yeah. Not that Civ 5 couldn't use a little more production.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I don't think that's
the right way to go. I go back and forth on that, actually.
It's a suggestion that I keep seeing a lot, but I'm not sure if it's the right way to go because it's just going to create a hell of a headache balancing everything and having the proportions of everything working correctly and all that. You're going to have to really specifically choose some kind of way to make the terrain matter. And that's just adding a few hammers here or a few pieces of loaf there is not really going to do it for you. There was one suggestion which I actually liked. It was really good. And it was allow trading posts only on tiles with a road. And then delete the trading post if the road is deleted. And an additional bonus, allow the trading posts to grow over time when utilized. And that seems like a really good suggestion. You have a path from one city to another or something like that, and then put trading posts along the road.
Well, that's the way it looks in a city today. All of the stores and stuff are along major roads, and it's all these other things off in the distance that are the fields.
And historically as well, that makes sense. You had like the King's Road where it was safe to travel, and you had inns and all these various economies. Popping up all over the planet, yeah. And you had to protect them as well to make sure they were safe or else trade would suffer, famously by Muhammad the Prophet and all that. He raided the Meccan trading routes, and that's what brought them to their knees. So there's a lot of stuff that could be done with that. A lot of potential, I think, to develop a kind of trade routes would be, they would be cumulatively productive over time as you use them, a bit like cottages in Civ 4.
In the last episode, we talked about this thread, but it got cut due to time, and one of the guests there also brought up this exact topic about trading posts with a road, and then that brought in the realism point, and then you kind of emphasized that there too, John. In Civilization V, where we have road maintenance, combined with the fact that trading post yield got nerfed, okay, there would then have to be either a change to the trading post, either going back to what it was before in terms of its a base output, and or if we're going to have that road maintenance, then have something like we have with Civilization IV. Well, yes, there's the road maintenance. So at the start, it's kind of like one of those things where I'd say, okay, if you want to start making money from the trading post, then we've got kind of a progression over time like we had in Civilization IV, but then you have to have a road on it in order to be able to realize that. Or do you have the road on it at the start, and it's just kind of a neutral thing, but then over time, after X number of turns, and that trading post starts giving you, instead of the one gold, it's two gold, and then it's three, and then it's four. And if the road maintenance is costing you one gold per turn, then as time goes on, it's going to go along. And I know that was a big, big, big thing in Civilization IV, except that right now, with the strength that is gold, where you can buy from the set, for Civilization V, I don't think that's a good idea, if for no other reason than we talked about the domino effect. Well, that's not the expression Mackie used. The cascade effect, I think that's what you said.
Mm-hmm.
The cascade effect is going to be so high in Civilization V that I just want to put my head down on my desk.
Yeah, even if you were restricted to only placing it on a road, it's going to encourage people to build more roads to place more trading posts. That's the thing. And then if they start paying for themselves and they've offset themselves, and then, yeah, you will be swimming in it like Scrooge McDuck.
I don't know.
I know. I like the idea too, but at the same time, I can see the problems.
Yeah, and you wouldn't want to dive into the goal like Scrooge McDuck did on DuckTales. That would hurt like heck. No, kids, don't try this at home.
Yeah, gold has a fair amount of viscosity, as in it's a solid, not a liquid.
I know gold is malleable, but not the human body really isn't going to be able to provide that.
It's cartoon gold. It magically works like water, guys. Come on.
Unless you rub yourself in oil first.
I don't know what kind of podcast you think we're on here, John. In this thread, as I said, there are a lot of suggestions. John pointed out that there's 16 pages in here, so, you know, too long didn't read, audience, you would be forgiven. But we put up with the torture of going through the thread, or at least I did. And there was a suggestion from Dexter's. Suggestion to allow two types of maps to be tradable, which, of course, in Civilization V, there's no map trading period, and we've talked about...
Need map.
So Dexter's talks about, in the classical medieval era, allowing the trade of topographical maps showing general topography of their explored areas. And then the Renaissance era would allow the AI to trade you a more detailed version that shows their cities and resources as well as city-states, but you'll need to send an embassy to meet those city-states. Revealing them on the map wouldn't count. And when I read this suggestion, I was thinking about, yes, I could see that working within Civilization V, and then it made me think of, I'm certain it's Civilization III, and yes, generally we don't talk about Civilization III on the show for...
Many reasons.
Reasons? We'll just call it reasons. But in Civilization III, there were two different types of maps you could trade. There was what you knew about the world, but then there was also your territory. It might have even been called a territorial map in diplomacy. Mm. So I like the idea of that return, and that's what Dexter's is talking about here, only he's being even more specific, because with a territorial map or a world map, regardless of whether it was particular resources or cities or improvements, it revealed what you knew that turn about the world or, of course, about your own territory. So I think that if you take that idea from Civilization III and then bring it back to kind of what Dexter's is talking about, that's interesting, but I think it could just simply be maybe at the outset you can, you know, when you get writing, okay, maybe you have to establish an embassy, then you can start trading maps. But then as time goes on, getting into the particular era, then the maps would be able to reveal more. So there would be value in not just trading maps, you know, at one point in the game, but at multiple points in the game beyond the reasons that we have right now. Just add another dimension to that.
That's a really good idea, because right now the map, you explore once and you're done. And you get half the map from the other guys, and that's it. For the entire span of civilization, you know, 4,000, 6,000 years, you have one map. And I really think that certain technologies should spawn better information and stuff like that. It kind of makes sense. And it also makes maps actually valuable in some sense.
And yes, yeah, so none of this, you know, like revealing false information or anything like that. Like, don't make it a penalty, you know, in the sense that I go see someone say, well, what if, you know, you tried to trade a map with a civilization, but your knowledge was, or maybe there's a way that you could trade a map, but you could, you know, have it feel like false information or something. I realize that's not in the suggestion at all. And I guess maybe it's just my nature from reading Civ forums too much that I'm trying to figure out how to troll these suggestions, even when they're good, because it makes more interesting conversation. But
well, you could put in some small things as when you trade maps, you could choose to reveal your territory as, say, I don't know, 50% larger or 20% smaller than it actually is, you know, if you want to hint towards certain things. And then the map would be, I remember there's an old game that had a really cool version of that. They had, like, the Fog of War was a kind of hand-drawn map, which was really bad and inaccurate. And as you explored, it kind of broke the new territory into as it actually was. And I think getting a map from an AI would turn the black into a poorly sketched map, and then you could later with actual exploration discover what was really there.
They cleverly hide all their cities behind, here there be dragons.
Yeah, for example, or put a mountain chain where there wasn't one in order to, or make their territory look smaller so it wasn't worth conquering, or much bigger so that they look more dangerous. Stuff
just
like that.
Small, that's... humble empire. Please don't conquer us.
Yeah.
20 turns later. Hi, but our army's not small.
Yeah, for example. You know, or put in a false bottleneck somewhere, you know, and say that, oh, by the way, I have some 300 guys standing there. Right? Espionage points could be put towards, you know, discovering the actual locations. Or I really think that there's too many definites and too many knowns in the civilization game, especially Civ 5. You just know what's there, more or less. You have the Fog of War, but this should be, I mean, really, if you look, maps were, again, realism, not supposed to trump gameplay, but the map of the world wasn't finished properly, well done, accurately until what, the late 1700s, 1600s, right? You see these old 1600 maps, and America is huge, completely oversized, much like they think of themselves today.
Yeah, or they think the peninsula on the end of California was an island on itself. And
right, little stuff like that. And I mean, that lasted up until at least the 1500s, 1600s. And so
yeah.
I think that part of the exploration of the world, again, one way to do it is to make the world bigger, but again, that would mess the process up. So...
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
You can Skype us at The Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast and Revcast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
It's out there on the interwebs. Is that a cell phone?
Sorry, I just turned it off.
I did notice you didn't mention your participation in the weekly Saturday Games on occasion that Turncast episodes are made from. I think that speaks well.
Yeah, of course. My participation in Turncast has been enjoyable, and I hope people enjoy listening to them as much as I enjoy saying those things. I don't say anything stupid, right? Right? I don't.
Right.
Yeah, I'm a very
and there's no magic editing to say otherwise. Nope.
That's editing.
It's just editing you speak of.
Record dates assorted 2011 and 2012. Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.